Good morning and welcome to another interview on GivingCirclesHelp.com. This is Sharon Lipinski, and I'm excited today to be talking with Christy Coe of the Baltimore Women's Giving Circle. Christy, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Christy, could you start by giving us an overview of the Baltimore Women's Giving Circle?
The Baltimore Women's Giving Circle began over 10 years ago with 50 members. It was the idea of the Association of Baltimore Area Grantmakers and the Baltimore Community Foundation, who got together and recruited Pam Corcoran and Shelley Goldsecker as the first co-chairs, and then they in turn recruited basically friends of theirs that they thought would be interested in helping women in the Baltimore metropolitan area. They worked hard the first few years in developing policies and procedures, clarifying their mission, and getting the whole thing up and running. The Baltimore Community Foundation gave them $10,000 as seed money, which really helped in the very beginning stages. They decided early on that it would be a traditional circle, which means money in, money out. We do not have an endowment. We every member gives $1,100 a year, $1,000 of which is pooled and given as grants. The remaining $100 goes to pay administrative costs. And to be honest, there's usually a little bit left over, and that we save and have used for developing our website and other, large expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of the circle is to assist disadvantaged women and their families. And we find that this covers a pretty broad spectrum. And it makes it really exciting, though, from the aspect of what our grants are and what our education is. We give grants up to $20,000 per organization. An organization can only apply every other year. And we try to maintain the focus on women, and we find that mission drift is a constant tendency, and so we refocus and read our mission often to remind our members what we really, the reason for us being here. We have grown to 375 women, which means that we will be giving away in grants $375,000 this year. Our work cycle really is September through May. We have four full circle meetings a year, three of which the Education Committee plans, and one the co-chairs plan, the co-chairs of the circle. The real focus of the circle is the grant making and the education of our members. We take both very seriously. Approximately one-third of our members participate in committee work. But we call ourselves a no-guilt organization. If you just write your check, you're just as good a member and in good standing as if you, share and work on a number of the committees. That's made us very popular with, women that are working and women that are not working.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help? Or?
Yep, that's a great start. So I have a couple of questions for you. I was looking on your website, and I noticed that you started with 52 women. And that makes mm-hmm. sense if you were part, if it was a foundation effort, because I was wondering how so many women came together with an idea.
Okay, go ahead.
And then you've grown from 52 members to 375 members. So I was curious what you could, any insights you can share with us about growing and attracting members.
It's interesting that you ask that because we have been challenged over the past couple years in diversifying our membership more and in attracting younger members. In the beginning, Pam and Shelley, asked their friends. They also looked to women that were active already in charitable organizations and nonprofits in Baltimore, women in leadership positions, and both had been very active in the philanthropic world in Baltimore. So that really helped. They were pretty high profile, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, the word just spread, and women, I say this, really are interested in helping other women, and we're fairly new to the game of giving, of philanthropy, and this was a way to learn about philanthropy and also help women at the same time. currently, over the past couple years, we have our membership committee has taken on efforts to broaden our base. We have been representative more of the population in Northwest Baltimore, I would say. And so we have been trying to be more inclusive. We've had some community outreach meetings. We've, you know, coffees. We encourage people to invite prospective members to our Full Circle meetings, you know, just to have, you know, lunch with us and enjoy our speakers. And then Ellen and I have Ellen Bernard and I are the co-chairs of the Circle right now, and we've started having coffees with our new members. So we explain the Circle really well in hopes that they will then get their friends. So it's kind of friends finding friends, and business associates also. We find a lot of our women talk to people in their office and get them to join that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. So what is the, I noticed on your website that you ask for a 2-year commitment when somebody joins. So over the next 2 years, they know they're going to be giving your organization $2,200. Is that correct?
That is. And we find, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that fact because most of us don't even think about that. You know, people are pretty, pretty committed once they join because we're so flexible. You know, when I joined, I was working full-time as a fundraiser, and I was interested in women's giving. That's really how I got involved, whereas my co-chair, Ellen, was one of the initial 50 members and was a non-working woman. I couldn't, because I was working full-time, participate as fully as Ellen. And 1 year, you know, I did not serve on any committees. I just wrote my check. But the 2-year commitment, it doesn't seem to be a problem. Everybody usually stays in for much longer than that. Or I think we would be pretty flexible if someone, you know, after a year really found it objectionable, but we really haven't met with that problem. Most of the people that are leaving the organization, and to be honest, 10 to 15 maybe per year, I hate to use this expression, but some age out, you know, some move out, you know, move to other locations, and others just find themselves, you know, their lives have just gotten too much. We do find some women drop out for a year and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to be pretty open and flexible for our members, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Do you keep in touch with members after they leave? Do you have like a newsletter or something that people, that you send out to members or past members?
We don't. When, you know, someone resigns, we always make sure to somebody on membership makes a follow-up call, you know, to talk to them to see if there's any problem. But no, we don't really. You know, they know our website, and so they can keep up that way, you know, if they like. But we haven't really, you know, made an effort in that area, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I did want to talk a little bit, though, about our education program. We take it really seriously, and our education committee is about 20 members. And the program, in addition to the 3 Full Circle meetings, we have briefing breaks during the year, usually 2, and often we'll have a site visit or maybe a tour of an area of Baltimore offered to our members. The education Full Circle meetings, to give you an example, the first one this year, we had Dr. Barbeau, who is the new Baltimore City Health Commissioner, talk about women's health in Baltimore and the challenges. She was recruited here from Brooklyn, New York. And it was really an interesting meeting, and she was able to share with us her plan for 2015. The second meeting was the educational piece was spurred by a grant making. Last year, we funded 2 different efforts for veteran women. This is a really rising problem in our society because women are much more active in the military. And however, the military, VA, and all of aspects, has been traditionally a very male-dominated organization. So that being the case, we had our second educational program focused on veteran women and the challenges. And we had brigadier generals that were women and a number of women from the VA in Washington. Being close to Washington, D.C. is really nice because we can sometimes tempt some of that expertise. And it was really stimulating. It was interesting because there are no answers right now. So it wasn't that It was mainly exposing our members to, you know, a growing problem, making them aware. So when they read the newspaper and, you know, reviewing grants, they really know that this is an area that needs some attention.
Mm-hmm.
So we're open in our grant making to the tried and true, but also new ideas. We truly try to keep up with, you know, the new things while supporting those that do work.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should mention our grant committee. This year has about 95 members, and the way we work, we have two co-chairs of our grant committee, and they have two educational meetings in the fall for members of that committee, and open to the Circle members if they want to come, and basically talking about pressing needs. One of the meetings was about housing and job opportunities for women, and the second meeting was about reading financial reports so that our grant makers would be better able to assess the grant applications. Well, the grant committee is divided into teams. Each team is made up of approximately six members. They have a team leader, and each team is given anywhere from 6 to 9 grants to read and assess, and if they determine they are, let's say, eligible, then to make site visits and to really do some in-depth interviewing, and then eventually make recommendations to the full grant committee that votes and makes and decides which organizations should be funded. This list is then brought to the May meeting of the Full Circle, and we ratify their decision. Okay? Do you have any questions about that process?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. So, what kind of things are your grant committee looking at, or what are you basing your decisions on?
First, we send out an RFP to approximately 300 organizations in Baltimore. And that, I will say, took time for this organization to develop that list in the beginning.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This past summer, a group of 10 of us reviewed and called over 350 to 400 organizations to update our contact information. It was really cute. They were really thrilled to get a call from a funder. It was a wonderful experience for all of us, a real change, you know, putting the hat on the other side. Anyway, we send out the RFP, and then we receive the applications. Also, you can apply just by looking at our website. And the applications are quickly reviewed by a small team to make sure that they are appropriate for our mission, for example, that the organization is asking us to grant for a women's program. You know, sometimes people might ask for a men's program or something. We do say women and their families because sometimes men are included in the program. We don't want to be so restrictive mm-hmm. that we harm a program. Anyway, so that's first, they're kind of cleansed a little bit, and then they're divided up on the grants are divided up on the teams, and each team member takes home the stack, Xerox copy of the stack of the grant, of each grant, and are expected to read them thoroughly and review them, and we have a questionnaire that everybody gets to answer about each grant, you know, the mission and you know, the financials and the board representation, and we really do a pretty thorough review of the grant, and then the team gets back together and discusses each grant, and pretty thoroughly. We also, in our grant teams, we try to mix up experience with new members. So sometimes it's a learning, you know, for the brand new members, they're kind of quiet the first go around because they're really doing a lot of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier than you might think. You know, reading financials, you can tell if they know what they're doing, if it's organized, if their mission, you know, if the program they're asking is really true to the mission of the organization, or if they're not going way off on some cockamamie idea. And then also if it's an area that we really are interested in, you know what I mean. But that really doesn't become much of the case. You know, we've funded everything from homeless shelters to, I mentioned the Veteran Women's Program. There's just a huge list. We've funded, I think, over the years, maybe 120 different organizations, different ideas that come along. Unfortunately, I don't have the list in front of me, but anyway. So does that answer?
Yeah, so you weed them out as you're going through the process, and then when the committee has their final ones that they're recommending, at that point in time, is it kind of a done deal and it's just, you know, a formality of making it official, or is there still another process once it leaves the committee?
Well, we do, the team, maybe I stop short, the team does do a site visit. They go out and meet meet the program director and, you know, some of their staff and ask questions. And that's important. You know, we really want to make sure that the people involved are really energized and focused and know what they're doing, and also that the facility is, you know, up to speed. And then they come back and the team has a final discussion to decide which of the grants they've read they want to recommend to the committee. Then the whole committee gets together, all 90-some, and we have a very brief presentation of each grant. And then we go home, and we're given, I think, 2 days to vote on. We do the voting on SurveyMonkey. I don't know if you know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, online voting, and then get back together, you know, a week or so later. And if it's been obvious, the ones, you know, then we just kind of refine the vote, would be the best way to say. And then once that, let's say, if we have enough funds to fund maybe 20, once the 20 is determined, then we take, yes, the grant committee. Co-chairs take that list. We distribute it to the full membership, and then they do ratify it at the final May meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But it is based on the recommendation of the grant committee, because our membership understands that the grant committee has spent a lot of time and energy,
mm-hmm.
you know, in making sure that these organizations deserve funding from us.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. And I'm curious, you've got 375 members, and you got 4 full meetings per year. How many of those members are showing up at those meetings? Do you have a really big room to hold all these people?
We do. Actually, we do. We have this great church. We always look around for places, you know, to make it convenient for people. But we have this one wonderful church that has a big hall and a big parking lot. And we have it there. Usually we get about 160, 170 members. But, you know, as I said, it doesn't, if they don't come, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really encourage people to come, because it's usually pretty interesting and exciting. Another thing we do is when you come, you're assigned a table. So we mix up our members. I know this sounds kind of silly, but everybody, you draw a number and it tells you where you're going to sit. And we found it has really helped new members get to know people. You know, we weren't sure. We did it. We started actually last year. We had a 10th anniversary party, and we're not really a social organization. There are a lot of people that in the circle that were worried about this in the beginning. We've become just another women's group, and that we are not that. But we decided we would have a luncheon last year, the first one we've ever had, just to celebrate the anniversary, 10-year anniversary of the organization. And we did the number drawing then, and everybody loved it so much we decided to continue. And it really has helped integrate new members into the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important when you're seeing kind of rapid growth. We were at around 300 members for a number of years, but we've really jumped in the last couple of years, which is great. And, I mean, you know, in recessionary times, it just speaks so terrifically about the women in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they understand that this is really the time you really must step up,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It gives me kind of chills. I did want to talk about our communication committee briefly. It's a really hardworking crowd, and it's really an important group because, as I said, you don't have to come to the meetings, but we try to keep people informed, and we do it by our website, which we've been working on over a number of years. I mean, it's really pretty good, but we're, you know, constantly trying to develop it. We have a public side, and then we have a private side. On the private side, our members can get the minutes from all the meetings and the exact locations and, you know, all the details they need to be an active member in the organization. We have one printed newsletter a year. We have an e-newsletter about every 6 weeks. And then we have what's called an e-blast. That would be sent out to members, just a quick notification. If something's come up, we want to make sure everybody knows about it. Our communications committee right now is discussing social media and what we're going to do about where we're going to fall. We have a visioning committee that looks to the future, obviously, and they have recommended to the communications committee that we need to discuss this thoroughly. This is I haven't mentioned this before, but we are very much a circle. And by that I mean we are not a hierarchy. And so decisions are made through consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And so the social media issue is really an interesting one, because we have people that are ready to have us on Facebook and have a blog and everything on one side, and then there are those on the other end that say, no, 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 it's too much. So we'll have to work through this. We had a couple, you know, folks in our organization that popped us up on Facebook but didn't tell anybody. So nobody was updating it, so we had to get ourselves off of Facebook. So now we can do it in a more organized fashion. But I have a feeling, because we want younger members and because we want to stay current, we will be entering the realm of social media. It's just making sure that we can manage it effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a volunteer organization, and we really respect people's time, and it's and also the quality of what we do. So we don't, you know, we don't want to take on more than we can manage well.
Right.
What I would say.
I love the idea of a visioning committee, because it can be hard when you're doing the daily stuff of just managing a giving circle to look forward and think, where are we going and how do we get there and what are the tools? That's a really great idea.
We started it about 3 years ago, and 3 or 4 years ago, and I was lucky to be on it then, and it was just started kind of as an ad hoc committee, and now it's become part of our, you know, regular committee structure, and just for the reason you mentioned. Running the circle, you become so busy that you just don't have time to look into these things. And one of the issues was our membership, and we wanted to be more open. We wanted to be more diverse. You know, we didn't have enough diversity in our membership. Period. And racial or ethnic or age. And so, you know, we've worked hard, you know, on that issue. And then social media is just another example.
Mm-hmm.
So. That is exciting. There's one other thing. I have two, actually, a couple of things I really want to make sure to mention.
Sure.
In our grant process, we have two committees that are really rather unique. We have the post-grant committee, and what that is our grantees receive their checks in June, and they're expected for that year, and they're expected to, you know, fulfill their grant requirements during that year. They sign a letter of acceptance, et cetera. And they are each assigned a member from the post-grants committee that will work with them during the year and elicit two reports as to the progress and the final conclusion of their grant. It's a little bit demanding on our grantees, but we want to make sure they spend the money as they say. And also, it's another educational piece for our members. We do expect them to do a site visit. And they actually get to know the grantee pretty well. So it's a benefit in both directions. The other committee we have is called Grantee Connect. And we decided to start this a few years back just as a service to our grantees. And what we do is we have three coffees a year at different nonprofit locations that have volunteered. And we invite all those that we have given grants to over the last 10 years. And usually it works out, we get about 30 at each. Let's say we have 100 that have received grants. And we get about 30 organizations coming, and we have a topic for the year. 1 year it was technology. It's pretty interesting we're doing that, and we aren't participating in social media ourselves. We're learning too. So we had speakers come in. And we don't run the meetings. We just have speakers, and I mean, that's not true. We serve coffee, but we have everybody sit on tables, and they just exchange ideas. And so what happens is you have large organizations like hospitals and universities represented, and then you have really small neighborhood organizations here. So they really do learn from each other. They've been very successful. It's just like the meetings are about an hour and a half, and usually the third one is the most populated because, you know, people have been busy during the year and they can't come. But usually only about six or so circle members come to serve the coffee and kind of direct traffic. But we found it to be very successful, and our grantees really appreciate it. So we're really happy to offer that service to them. So.
That's interesting, because It's not necessarily serving your Giving Circle members, but it's serving the people that you give money to.
That's exactly what it is. And
we really
care about them, and we care about helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if you've been involved in philanthropy, there's an enormous disparity between the large and, you know, fully, you know, funded organizations and these really small corner ones that, but each of them are really serving a purpose in our communities and, you know, should be encouraged to share, you know, what they can. So we really like that program, and we're really pleased. It grew out of the post-grants committee. And also what's fun about it is we ask when they're there together if any will volunteer to host a coffee. And coming into this year, we had 14 of them volunteered. You know, we just have 3 coffees.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, how nice is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Any more questions?
Well, I have so many questions for you, but we're approaching the end of our time, and
okay.
I want to respect that. But, you know, you're the oldest Giving Circle I've had an opportunity to speak with, and you also are the largest. And I think that there's probably a lot more information I would like to hear from you someday, maybe about how you have found leadership transition, because I find that Giving Circles struggle with that. And any, you know, maybe additional advice you can give people about, you know, maintaining a healthy Giving Circle. But I'm afraid that's all going to have to wait. Is there anything else that you feel is really important and you'd like to share with us right now?
I would like to say, structurally, we have co-chairs for the circle.
Mm-hmm.
We have co-chairs for each of our committees. And on the committees, the terms are staggered. So there is always a new person and always an experienced one. All the terms are 2 years, and so you understand, so the learning process is there. It's covered. And we found that's really helpful.
Uh-huh.
You understand that?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is the co-chairs of the circle, though, are an exception to that. We both come in. We come in together new, and so that's the only exception. But usually, and they try to, when they select our nominating committee, it's actually starting with that now, and they try to mix people up. You know, Ellen Bernard, as I mentioned, was one of the founders. Non-working woman. I was working full-time, been in like half the time she had. You know, and they do things like that
mm-hmm.
on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we, as far as leadership, it's very important, and each of our committees tries to get people on their committees to handle smaller tasks, take responsibility. You know, in the education, we have people run different briefing breaks. They are small meetings of interest, or 2 people will run the program for one of the full circle meetings. You know, we're constantly delegating and constantly developing leadership. It is a priority of our organization to develop leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that really helps if you do that, if you make it a priority. So it's grant making, educating our members, and developing leaders.
And so you're doing it throughout the year as you're you know,
uh-huh.
asking people
yes.
to do things. And then you yes. have a nominating committee kind of looking at your membership and identifying.
The nominating committee nominates the officers of
okay.
the circle, and then the co-chairs of the circle select the committee co-chairs.
Okay.
Okay. And the committee co-chairs, though, are, ideas for that come out of the nominating committee, though.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that's kind of how it works. So, but you know, we work at this all the time. This circle is very. We work hard. And being a co-chair, I'm glad I'm not working anymore. Ellen and I work hard. We have a lot of meetings. We tend to attend a lot of our committee meetings. But I will say this, we have had co-chairs that are both full-time lawyers, and they were just as successful as we are. It's really interesting, having 2-year terms, you get really different faces and different styles. And I think the circle really benefits from that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, Christy, thank you so much. I really appreciated
sure.
all the information you shared with us.
My pleasure.
Okay.